It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a very good evening to you. Tuesday the 26th of July. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up between now and 8 p.m. this evening, James Forbury will update you on the current success of Unilock Cosmetics, including a brand new pop-up shop that they're going to open in Mullingar just in time for the Black Cure, which of course begins this coming weekend. John Gagan of Mullingar Chamber will also be on to talk about the FLA and how the town and the businesses are preparing for the event, as that they're teaming as are calling the homecoming FLA, because the very first FLA Cule, of course, took place in Mullingar. But John will also talk about the inaugural business awards that the Chamber are holding later this year. Nominations for those awards are now open, and you'll be able to find out which categories you can nominate your favourite businesses in very shortly. And also Regina Dunn of Bloom HQ in Mount Rat will talk about the launch of a new initiative for the agri-food sector in the Midlands, beginning with a think tank that's taking place tomorrow, the 27th of July. It's all about the Agri-Innovation Development Midlands. It's a collaboration between Bloom HQ and the CUBE National Centre for Low Carbon. So you can find out more about what their aims and objectives are, and indeed how you can go and attend that think tank that's taking place tomorrow. And amongst all that, you're going to find out how you'll be able to hear where you can get access to details about over 140 jobs that are currently on offer right across the Midlands. This is happening every day, day in, week out as well, where huge numbers of jobs are available. We're going to give you some updates on where some of those are across the next hour. If you want to get in touch with me here on the show, you can do so on our text and WhatsApp number. That's 083 3010 103. Drop me a text message, drop me a voice message, whatever suits you best, but always delighted to hear from you as well. And I'll have any business news updates that we get through between now and 8 o'clock. If any come to me, I will make sure to give those to you this evening as well. But to begin this evening, we're going to start looking at an area that I suppose has been right in, at the foremost of many of our thoughts for a number of months now, and really exacerbated by the invasion of Ukraine. But the whole idea around energy, electricity, gas shortages has been very much, I think, you know, at a lot of our minds as well. And it really asked a question too, that, like, you know, from an Irish perspective, what are we doing as a nation to ensure that we are self-sufficient when it comes to energy and particularly electricity? And of course, many of you listening will be more than familiar with Bord na Mona. And I'm going to hazard a guess, if I asked most people, what's the first thing you think of when you think of Bord na Mona? Majority of people will probably instinctively say turf or peat. And whilst that has been the foundation or the flags under the company for over 50 or 60 years, it has been phased out. I mean, you'll be very familiar that the power stations have now closed or they've ceased using peat, and some are now closed for good. But the company has been in a stage of transition. It has proven itself to be extremely agile in how it responds to the needs of the Irish nation and the Irish people, and how it goes about creating new forms of energy, particularly energy that is renewable. To find out how that's, you know, what has been happening so far, what's in the pipeline, and what kind of key targets and metrics there are around that, I'm delighted to be joined by Brendan Kelly. And Brendan is the commercial manager at Bord na Mona. He's a Westmead man now living in Offaly, but he's travelled the world in terms of roles like this, particularly in the energy and renewable sector, and is now back home and has been heading up this operation for the past year or so. Brendan, good evening. You're very welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Yeah, thanks, Ronan.
Brendan, Bord na Mona's transition towards renewables, what's the best point to start that story? And can you take listeners through what has been achieved already?
Yeah, look, Bord na Mona has evolved, I would say, over the last number of years. We are now Ireland's leading climate solutions company. And what are climate solutions? Really, these are solutions that will help Ireland reach climate neutrality or net zero carbon emissions. And that manifests itself really across three core areas of our business. The first of those is, as you've talked about, in renewable energy, where we're delivering some of the largest renewable energy infrastructure projects in the state at the moment. And it's worth pointing out, I suppose, in all core areas of our business, we at the moment are, you know, we're investing heavily, but we're recruiting heavily in these areas. So on a renewable energy side of things, we're recruiting project managers, we're recruiting engineers, operatives, technicians across our wind and our thermal assets. The second part of our business is really is a recycling business, and we are now one of the largest recycling companies in Ireland, which, you know, people may not know. We've got operations in the Midlands, the East and South East. And again, we're actively recruiting, you know, operatives, drivers, technicians in that space. The last area then really is our peatlands rehabilitation restoration program. And that's looking at rewetting and some of our large 80,000 hectare land bank to capture carbon and sequester carbon in the soil. And again, we're looking for surveyors, ecologists across that business and across all of our supporting businesses in finance, HR, legal, etc. So it's a growing business. And as you said, we're investing heavily in solutions that help us get to that net zero point.
And if anybody's interested in those jobs in particular, at bordenamona.ie, there's over 80 positions available, as Brendan has said, across three primary areas of that business. But the one that you're most passionate about and most focused on is renewables. And Bordenamona had, I think, back in around 2010, generated about 10% of their energy from renewables. Where is that number now, and what has happened in order to increase the number of the amount of electricity that's been that's coming from renewable sources?
Yeah, so somewhere at the moment between 70-80% of our energy in the renewable energy side is coming from green sources. That's largely delivered through our wind farm asset base. So we've got a number of wind farms obviously operational in the Midlands, in the northwest and in the south of the country. We're continuing to develop a number of other wind farm projects at the moment, but we're also looking to invest in new areas like solar, in battery storage technology, in green hydrogen technology, all of these again, which would be needed to help us get reduce carbon emissions in our sector. And it's worth pointing out, you know, this didn't happen overnight. Our Mount Lucas wind farm, as people will be familiar with, has been operational since 2014. Along with our Bracana wind farm in Tipperary. So we've been at this for a while, and you know, given the current situation, we're really looking to double down on that and accelerate the pipeline of projects that we can deliver.
Given the scale of land ownership that Bordenamona holds, it surely puts you at, almost gives you competitive advantage to be able to develop those large scale wind farms.
Yeah, we do. We have an 80,000 hectare land bank, as I said, across, you know, largely based in the Midlands, but in the northwest and the south of the country as well. And what that allows us to do is to develop, you know, infrastructure projects at scale, at the lowest possible cost. And again, it makes it a little bit easier than if you're dealing with, you know, multiple parties on some of these projects. But, you know, we work very closely with the communities. We work closely, you know, to provide as much information as we can, and to, you know, give as much information as early as possible as we develop out those projects as well.
Wind has been, as you mentioned, they're a prominent part of the plan and the move towards renewables as well. When you mention the various other alternatives that could be there in time, eventually, what role does wind play? Like, will it be 90% of the renewables? Will it be 50? Where do you see that going as these new technologies also come on stream?
Well, look, the system is moving towards being able to accommodate 100% of what they call non-synchronous penetration, which is renewable energy. At the moment, today, the maximum amount of renewable energy on the system that can be accommodated is 75%. And that will transition upwards to 100% renewables at any point in time over the next decade or so. We obviously have our climate action targets in the power sector to have 80% of our energy needs met from renewable sources. So that requires effectively a doubling of onshore wind capacity over the next 8 years, you know, which is a significant challenge, in addition to bringing in onshore wind and some solar as well. So look, we will deliver projects as quickly as we can get them consented and through the planning process. And as I mentioned at the outset, that as we deliver more projects, that leads to more jobs and in the local community. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to deliver these projects as quickly as we can. And now we've built up a strong reputation. We've built up a strong base of employees that are capable of doing this. So we're in a good space. But you know, we really will be accelerating this over the next 10 years or so.
With developments in the areas, particularly such as solar and that, will we ultimately see potential co-location then of, say, solar and wind farms? Is that possible or doable?
Yeah, so Bordenamona actually will be moving forward with our first large-scale, utility-scale solar project. We were recently successful in Ireland's renewable energy auction with that project, which will be in County Kildare. ultimately, we see this as, yeah, we see co-location as the main area where we can, you know, effectively combine wind and solar, use the same electrical grid assets, use the same areas of land, and maximize the use of of the land and the assets to get them connected. So co-location is where we see that moving, yeah, for sure.
The thing that made the headlines a lot last year was the closure of the peat-fired power stations between Shannon Bridge and Lanesborough. But Edenderry Power Station remains active and biomass is becoming a huge player out there. How is biomass? What is biomass both for people listening and how is it utilised to create energy?
Yeah, so biomass is a residual fuel that we use today. We burn that in Edenderry Power Station and it's classified as a green fuel source. You know, it's much cleaner and greener than gas or coal or some of the other fuel sources in the power system today. It's residual. It's worth pointing that out. It's, you know, as we say, we take the leftovers from sawmills, from wood chip industries, and we use that. So it fits in with the circular economy, circular economy story that we are developing here in Bordamona. And happy to say, I suppose, that, you know, Edenderry Power Station recently received planning permission to extend the operation of that plant out to 2030. And next year, in 2023, that will transition to 100% biomass. So once the peat stocks run out, it will transition to 100% biomass.
It in turn will present opportunities for, you know, particularly in the agricultural sector there then, for maybe creating more biomass, or is it perhaps maybe the forestry sector too can contribute to that? Is there enough supply on the islands or even locally to power Edenderry Power Station if you do go to 100%?
Yeah, so today the majority of our biomass is indigenous biomass. It's sourced in Ireland. So when we purchase biomass from local suppliers, again, that money is feeding back into the local economy, which is super. As we transition to 100%, we'll be looking to source as much of that as possible in Ireland. We will probably have to source some of that from abroad as well. But, you know, that's a significant challenge in itself. And if we will use, to the extent possible, the biomass that's out there in Ireland in our plant.
Given the scale of what's happening with Bordamona, is this matched by any other organisations anywhere else in Europe across the world? Like, or is this something that could see us become a net exporter of energy eventually?
Yeah, so today we obviously have two interconnectors with the UK, electrical interconnectors with the UK. We have a third one, which is going through the planning process to France at the moment. And another one which is entering construction in the UK. So in the next, call it 5 to 7 years, we should have four links with Europe and the UK. And that allows us, as you said, when we have high wind resource and high wind output in Ireland at any point in time, we should be in a position to export that to those other countries. And vice versa, when we have, you know, situations where we need power, we can import that. So it's part of, you know, we are part of the integrated European system, and we'll continue to do that, and we'll continue to, you know, supply and import as we need to.
It'll be interesting to see what impact Brexit has on all that. You know, how much we charge the French versus the British, or maybe old history might come back to play there anyway. But no, it's fascinating to hear as well, I suppose, that idea as well of maybe Ireland ultimately being an exporter of energy if there is an excess there. From the point of view of, you know, energy shortages and that, you know, people are talking about this winter and maybe just to watch things, you know, even government saying bring your own gas and that. But it certainly sounds like, you know, from on a local level here in this country, we are quite secure. There's a great plan in place with Bordamona and other companies in this sector.
Yeah, well, I suppose, look, we will provide as much power as we can from our assets, you know, this winter and for the coming winter. And as I said, the quicker we can deliver projects to the system, we're about to energise a project out in Clonbillogue, you know, over the next couple of months. And that will start delivering green power to the system, and badly needed power to the system. So we'll continue to do our part, and I'm sure others will across the country this winter as well.
Brendan, thank you so much for coming this evening as well. I think it's an important message to get out there to people that, you know, precisely exactly how power is being generated, what has been done already and what's in the pipeline. So here's the continued success to yourself in your role as commercial manager and to all involved at Bordamona.
Super. Thanks, Ron.
And as Brendan mentioned there as well, there are over 80 jobs currently advertised with the company. Bournemouth.ie will give you access to all those, and you can find out how you can go and apply for those if it's something that is of interest to you. A brand new initiative for the agri-food sector in the Midlands has been launched to provide information, services and finance to encourage those in the sector to adopt and embrace digital technologies. It's a joint collaboration between two County Laois-based groups, Bloom HQ in Mount Rath and the Cube Low Carbon Centre of Excellence in Port Laois. And it will see a major agri think tank taking place tomorrow, again to gather that feedback from the sector across the Midlands. Regina Dunn is Digital Innovations Officer at Bloom HQ. A very good evening, Regina. Can you tell us how this initiative first came about?
Thanks a million, Ronan. So as manager in Bloom HQ back last year, I noticed we were hosting a lot of meetings for local macro groups, IFA groups, and then Niall Kelly in the Cube has obviously been working in the background to promote innovation, kind of climate change and low carbon based business. So Hazel Peavoy of the Walton Institute made us aware of a grant with the EU, the Horizon 2020 grant, under the Smart Agri Hubs programme, and it's notoriously difficult to get the funding under the programme, but we decided to try and collaborate, and like we recognised there was a need for a service there, something as simple as online banking for farmers. Banks are closing in small villages and towns, like all through the Midlands, so how do farmers access the market, access their banking and so on, and access that technology and the training to get onto it. So we put in the application and we found out then spring this year that we were successful, we were over the moon. So as part of the application, we have a few different remits. We were looking at some online training and in-person training, specifically kind of how to use satellite technology to improve your farm processes, or a holistic approach to sustainable land management then. And I suppose if everybody's seen the news yesterday and they're talking about the reduction in carbon and so on, this sustainable land management really training is really on topic and on point. And then one of the topics that we're constantly hearing back is, how do you access the funding for that? I'm only a small farmer, how can I afford that? So one of the project, one of the groups we have on board then are some green investment funds as well. So, and then access to business support through the likes of Team Rural, who will, Team Rural will be speaking tomorrow at our networking event as well. So we have a lot of people who want to collaborate, who want to support the food agri industry. And we found they were all working, a few of them were working together, but a lot of them were working independently. So this project will hopefully bring everyone into the room together tomorrow in Bloom HQ and just get that kind of topic going and what is needed, and generate the kind of a think tank and kind of say, right, this is what is needed. As part of the funding, we've also put in for some research and a research report to see what is being used, what's not being used, and what is needed to be able to access that innovation and technology. And then we'll print that report, and hopefully it'll inform further kind of projects going forward then in the next year or two.
Because some of those key points that you just focused on there, like, were, and they're quite ranging from the very simple and almost the absolutely necessary and basic, like down to just internet banking and just allowing farmers to get access to that and online transactions, right up to, you know, land management and you know how you get the best utilization of land, as well as reducing climate targets. So it's quite an extensive brief as well. So there must be a significant amount of funding behind this for you then.
Yeah, between us both, we received €98,000, and that will fund the training. We're hosting a series of drop-in clinics throughout the whole of the Midlands. So we'll be in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath over the coming months. And it will host, it'll pay for the research as well. Anybody who's kind of hired a researcher and so on, and the printing. And we hope to be at the ploughing festival as well, and gathering that information as well. So there's a lot of work for us in the background, but we're hoping between us and everybody who's come on board to work with us, it'll be really beneficial research and information to inform the agri-food industry in the Midlands going forward, because there's a lot of fantastic businesses, fantastic organic farmers and very small scale farmers who really want to do what the government is asking them to do, but they don't have the facilities or the tools to be able to do that. So the funding through this project will help us do that for them.
And do you think that the education piece is huge, and just that level of awareness about maybe what needs to be done, but also what can be done and what's actively achievable for farmers of all sizes? Because even just looking at it, like, Laois has over 180 food producers and accounts for about 10% of the farmers nationally. Like, that's just in one county. But I know you've mentioned there, but this initiative, it covers the three Midlands counties in particular. So anybody can get involved. So tomorrow's think tank, tell us a little bit more about that, where it's on, what time. But that's open to people from all counties.
From all counties. So it's at 2 p.m. Bloom HQ in Mentrath, so the old bridge of the Incomodate in Mentrath. Anybody who knows it, they've driven by it, gone by, so you'll know the old Incomodate in Mentrath if you've driven through Mentrath. So call in there at 2 o'clock. We'll have tea and sandwiches on, because we're aware that it is peak farming season. So if you haven't had lunch yet, come in and have a sandwich and a cup of tea and have a chat. We have a series of speakers. So we have somebody coming down from the UCD Lions Farm, which is like a test farm, and he's going to do a presentation on what they do. And we have myself and Niall will do a presentation on the project and what we hope to achieve from it. And we also have Team Rural, who will present on the business side of things and how to, like, I was reading there, we're one of the top exporters in the world. So how do you get access to export if you want to grow? Where do you find the information? And to be able to do that, and like, you're not alone doing that, so there's a lot of support and help there, and there's some really good exporters in Laois that ship all over the world. And then we have a panel of speakers as well. So we have a young farmer who uses the tech, and he's going to talk about why he implemented it. He's only a part-time farmer. We have, who else have we got on board? Team Rural, and then ourselves, and then we have someone from Hazel Peafry from the Walton Institute, and Vista Milks will speak as well about their programme. So we have someone from all different industries, and then we have hopefully a representative from the Irish Farmers Association as well. And they'll all be taking questions. We will also have a survey on site, anonymous survey, and it's basically to gather this data for the research report. And it just asks questions like, what tech are you using? Are you using any? Are you using none? And if you had the funding, would you use it? And what are your barriers to using tech? And then are there any other barriers as well? And some of the information coming back in the report is like education. Education is the biggest thing. Like, how do I find out that information? And time. Like, farm has a very time-consuming role. So where do you find the time to implement that education as well? And another aspect then as well that we hope to showcase is the social element of things too. So we hope to maybe have someone attend that will be showcasing fitness for farmers as well, and social kind of gatherings and so on as well.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fascinating.
It's and, a jam-packed
but you know, absolutely. But you know what really jumps out too, that when you see all the talk recently, all the debate around the climate targets for the agricultural sector, it actually sounds like a lot of farmers are already, you know, they're beginning to look into this and they're actually trying to make a difference and get ahead of this, which is, I think, will be of interest to listeners.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm hearing. We launched the kind of online training last week, and a lot of the questions and a lot of the feedback was, I'm really interested, but I need to know more, you know. And like, it's down to education, and it goes back to everything, isn't it, Ronan? Like, if you don't know why you're doing it, why would you do it? So it's by bringing in these education programs and hosting a test farm to say, this is how it's done, and this is how it's going to benefit you, and this is how it's going to benefit your pocket even as well. Because if you implement these changes and you reduce your carbon and you kind of improve your processes, it's going to come back financially as well. So it's a win-win.
I suppose there's no better sector to try to achieve those targets, because farming in particular, you know, the land is often passed down through multiple generations. So they're not just working the land for themselves. They're kind of custodians for future generations too. And I think we should all have great confidence and faith that the sector will meet its targets too. But it sounds fascinating. Again, for anybody who wants to find out more, www.bloomhq.ie or www.cubecentre.ie. Get involved in that think tank, but keep an eye out on all the social medias there stuff and all the press releases, because as Regina has pointed out, there's lots more happening as well. Regina, for now, thank you so much. Regina Dunn is Digital Innovations Officer at Bloom HQ.
Thanks, Ronan.
There you go. So that is fascinating, isn't it, to hear what is happening as well. The Cubicourt, or the Bloom HQ, is a social enterprise headed in Mount Rath there. And it's fascinating what happens sometimes when people in communities get together and they listen to what their community is looking for or the questions they're asking. And initiatives like that come up. And not only that, to get the funding put in place, there's potential more funding coming as well and more investment into it. And who knows what the outcomes from that will be, and particularly the outcomes from a climate change point of view and in terms of reducing the carbon emissions from a sector. So well done to everybody involved there, and looking forward to hearing more about that as that initiative develops. Not too many of you don't know what's happening in Mullingar starting this weekend. Of course, it is the homecoming FLA, as it's been labelled. But before we get on to all things FLA, coal related, and kind of how businesses are responding and what they're doing, I'm delighted to be joined by Jane Swarbrick of Inglot Cosmetics. Of course, the Swarbrick name is synonymous with Mullingar, and particularly with music and business, through many connections to Jane's. But she's here today to talk about their own business and what they're hoping to do this weekend as well. Very good evening, Jane. How has all been with Inglot? I mean, it's been a tough couple of years for a lot of businesses with COVID and all that. How has Inglot fared in all that?
Hi, yeah, how are you? And thanks for having us. Delighted to be on. Inglot has, we've actually transitioned quite a bit over the last couple of years. Just COVID brought many challenges and surprises. But we were lucky enough, we used to have standalone stores, and we are now located in wholesale stockists. So we're actually in over 200 pharmacies and outlets throughout the country, which is amazing. And I think we adapted quite well considering. But, it was hard going. We are, however, getting involved now in the FLA here in Mullingar, and it has spurred us on to do something that we've never done before. We are opening a huge discount store in the town centre in Harbour Place, and we just decided we had to get involved with this. We had to do something. Like, there's going to be so many people coming through the town, and the buzz here already is just phenomenal. So we are so excited that we were able to get a unit that we're renting out temporarily and opening a pop-up shop on Saturday.
So it'll be a case of all hands on deck for you then from Saturday over the weekend. I would expect it's going to be quite busy.
Absolutely. Well, I'm only in the door from the shop now, so we're in the setting up process, which is always the fun part. And we are taking all our boxes down from the warehouse and that, and we're getting ready for the launch. We thought we'd be better off doing a nice launch party on Saturday before things get really hectic. So we are opening our doors at 12 o'clock and we have 100 goodie bags for the first 100 customers. We're really excited about it. Our discounts in store will be up to 50% and more. So there'll be nothing under 50% off there. And then I think from Sunday onwards, we're just hoping we're going to have a great stream of people coming through the centre. We're located actually just across from Esquire's Cafe in Mullingar. So I think there's going to be a lot of traffic coming up and down from there and from Dunn's and the shopping centre. And even kind of within the centre, we've had so much support and the reaction has been brilliant. People seem really excited actually to have Inglot in there now too. And as I said, it's the first for us to do this kind of setup and discount store. So yeah, we're just hoping it goes well and very excited, as I said, to be part of all the activity that's happening now in the town.
If COVID brought about a diversification of the business model, has it changed the products you have on offer or the type of things, or how have you responded to that? Have people's kind of needs changed, particularly because we went through 2 years where unfortunately people weren't going out and socialising. So did that change the product lines that you now offer, or what has changed with Inglot from that perspective?
It didn't really. So I think women will always love their makeup and their lipstick, and they'll always keep a little bit at the end of the week to get their top up. But We did a couple of collaborations. So we did a huge collaboration with Maura Higgins, and that actually was due to launch literally as COVID kicked in. So we were very lucky that we had that collection, a little trick up our sleeve. We just postponed the launch from March 2 years ago to summer. And luckily we got that launch and it was a phenomenal success. And actually we do have a lot of Mora stock in the shop, just to note that. That's probably our biggest range that's going to be in there on discount. And then this year we did another collaboration. So we teamed up with an influencer, an amazing young lady called Rosie Connolly, who seems that they just act as great ambassadors for the brand. So it's lovely to be able to put a face to the name. So we are working a little bit harder, I suppose, just to get that customer base back and keep customers enticed. So we've had to definitely adapt. Like we would do a lot of things online that we used to before. A lot of our focus went online. So, you know, we'd be offering regular discounts or creating bundles. So we'd be, you know, doing a lot of the work for the customer now and trying to make attractive packages for them. And I think from that aspect, we probably never had to work so hard that way, because we always had our makeup artists and our sales assistants in store giving the Inglot experience, but we had to direct a lot of it online. So we were very lucky that we were able to partner up with those two amazing ambassadors and, yeah, just bring a little bit more diversity to how we were presenting our products, I think more so than change in what we were doing.
And does migrating online like that, does it allow access to more of an export market? Now, I know you've got the franchise for Ireland and the UK. Does it allow you to kind of ship product further afield, or has there been any interest from abroad?
No, we don't actually, because we have the Irish and the UK franchise only. So our partners would have different franchisees across the world. But we are actually now partnered up and working with one of our biggest stockers, which is Look Fantastic. So we supply to them and they are worldwide distributors. So that was actually a huge thing for us to get. And you would even find a lot of Irish customers shop with Look Fantastic, this brilliant online site, because they can get a huge range of cosmetics, like a lot of worldwide names. So that's probably opened us up to the much bigger market there, which has been, that was a huge coup for us to get just last year actually as well. So I think in the midst of all the craziness, there was all these small wins that we were definitely, you know, we were very glad to be just experiencing these positives. Like as a business, you really do need them, especially when things, you know, are just so challenging. All those little small wins mean so much more. And I suppose when you look at them on the bigger spectrum, they were huge to get like a new partnership with a brand like Look Fantastic and Maura Higgins and things like that. Like they were, yeah, amazing. I think looking back now in hindsight, we probably didn't celebrate them enough, to be honest.
Well, you're going to have a great chance to do it this weekend anyway. I suppose you just mentioned there things are busy around the town. How's it looking at the minute as we now a few days away from the official launch of Flacule 2022?
Yeah, it's looking brilliant and super active. I don't think I haven't spent this much time in the town centre in a long time, so I'm noticing everything. I've been talking to obviously a lot of other retailers and they're all preparing, and obviously the bars and that just seem to, they're going to lap this up, like they're ready and waiting for it. The town is really coming and shaping up and that, and even I'm looking at the Western Examiner and things, and you know, little things that you mightn't be doing before, like make sure you're following all the local businesses and things just to be able to track all the activity, because there's actually so much happening. It's nearly hard to comprehend how big this is going to be. So myself, I'm trying to figure out like what bars we need to go to and what gigs we need to go to. And of course, my dad's involved and he's running a few shows as well. So the whole family, as always, are involved in it, which is great.
That's brilliant. It is. It's such a unique event as well. Like it really does, it brings so much into towns, and just a great group of people gather for it as well, the hundreds of thousands of them, which is fantastic for the town and the local areas. But Jane, all the very best. Hopefully you get out of the shop for a few hours anyway to get to the bars and pubs and take in some music. And listen, all the best to everybody, to Aldous Warbriggs, and all the very best with the business as you move forward.
Thank you very much, and I absolutely will get out and be enjoying myself at the same time.
No bother to you at all. That's Jane Swarbrick there, of course, of Inglot Cosmetics, based in Mullingar. And it's a big celebration that's going to start in Mullingar from Sunday of this week. After a break, we're going to go back to Mullingar again to John Gagan, the president of Mullingar Chamber, and to find out more about their business awards that they've just launched, and nominations are now open for that. So you can find out how you can find a business that you'd like to nominate, and you can do so as well. I'm just going to bring your attention to one thing first. They're actually, we're mentioning there, Regina Dunn from Bloom HQ was mentioning about record exports. Well, Ireland exported a record €451 billion worth of products last year. The figure, which is published today, is the highest in the history of the state. A further record of €431 billion was spent by Irish people importing goods from outside the country. Minister for Trade Promotion Robert Tri says domestic Irish companies are exporting like never before.
In these figures also, we see for the first time the strongest ever figures for Enterprise Ireland client companies. Those are indigenous Irish companies who are trading internationally, and that was the best year on record for EI companies.
It is fantastic to see that growth from the indigenous companies, as Minister Troy points out there too, those very SMEs that crop up and then get Enterprise Ireland funding when they develop an export market, and that growth is continuing there too, and Ireland continues to be a huge and exporter and a significant player globally there too. My next guest, I'm going to apologise in advance for his slight out of breathness. I think he's been dancing a few polkas there this evening in preparation for what's coming this weekend. It's John Gagan, the president of Mullingar Chamber, but John is here really to talk about their upcoming business awards that are taking place this coming November, but nominations are now open. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ronan. Thanks for having me on.
Do you like that introduction you did?
I'm out of breath here.
I'd say there's no better man anyway. But look, as always, John, things are continuing to pace there with Mullingar Chamber, and you're bringing us some awards in November. Tell us a little bit about these.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We think there's an opportunity to have a very good night out here in November where we can celebrate a number of local companies and businesses that have performed quite well during COVID and before COVID. And we think it's an opportunity to celebrate their achievements and to hopefully get out 10 or 12 awards to some very deserving recipients.
Yeah, and some of the categories there that you have awards in are Outstanding SME of the Year for 1 to 50 Employees, Outstanding Large Business, Best Online Presence, Social Media, Excellence in Sustainability and Climate Action. You're really hitting on kind of some of the key topics there at the minute as well. Best in Hospitality, Excellence in Retail, Tourism. So lots of categories there for people. So nominations are now open. That's the important thing.
Yeah, look, it's a very wide group of companies and businesses we're targeting to make it as appealing as possible and to hopefully open up tonight to as many people as possible to can attend. And we think it's an opportunistic time at the end of COVID-19 to we can do this and hopefully have a bit of fun and get people out in the Mullingar Park Hotel and celebrate all that's good about Mullingar and the district.
And it's not just member companies who can be nominated, pretty much any organisation can be.
Absolutely anyone. We're asking people now to nominate companies for whoever or individuals who are sole traders, for whatever reason they want to fit into the various categories. And then we'll reach out to those companies and set up an evaluation process.
And
we hope to have that concluded in September, well ahead of the actual event on the 4th of November.
Gives you plenty of time then to get planning and plan that great night out as well. How do people go about nominating?
They just have to contact us through the link on the chamber office and send in their nominations, and we'll compile them then ourselves. Aisling Coleman in the office is running the thing from start to finish, and she'll be compiling the list and hopefully getting ready for the announcements, and fingers crossed it all goes well on the night.
And I suppose as well as that is, things are, there's always lots happening with you as well. What's coming up from the chamber perspective over the coming weeks?
Well, the next few weeks we're completely preoccupied with the FLA. Like we're really looking forward to what's ahead of us next week. We're hoping to have 300,000 to maybe 500,000 visitors into town over 7 to 10 days, and we think it'll be an outstanding success in Mullingar, particularly after COVID and given the work that's gone into preparing for it.
And of course, it's been labelled the homecoming FLA because the very first one was held in Mullingar in 1951. So it's a bit special then this year.
It is. I mean, Mullingar is very much the hub of music in Ireland, and traditional music sits in the very middle of all that. And, there's great history to it here. And I think Joe Kinnear and Willie Penrose and the entire team have done a great job at positioning this FLA to be a particularly successful one. And it's excellent timing at the end of COVID-19. And I think everybody is looking forward to a bit of fun, a bit of crack. And certainly it won't be found wanting for Mullingar next week.
I don't think so. And what's been happening behind the scenes that people maybe, beyond putting up bunting and flags and cleaning up, what have businesses been doing to be prepared for that influx of people for over the next week?
Yeah, I think a lot of businesses have been just ramping up their capacity. So there's going to be a major issue with capacity in the week of the flat, that you're able to get the amount of stock you can get in and get it out. And to have enough to cope with the numbers, because the numbers will be something pretty much unseen in Mullingar before. And apart from that, some businesses are kind of pivoting. They're doing different things. They're going to be changing from what they normally do to maybe selling fast-moving consumer goods instead of doing maybe hairdressing. And, you know, a couple of things are changing that way to make it a better experience for the visitors. And we think it'll be an outstanding success. I can't see any reason why it won't be.
No, it sounds like the preps are going well. As once the weather holds up too, it'll bring that flood of musicians and people as well.
Absolutely. And to be fair to the council, in the last week or two, they've done unbelievable work on the street. If you see the street, they've cleaned the whole streets. They've polished up all the lampposts. You know, the place looks like a new town. You know, it's absolutely fantastic.
It is. It's always, you often see that as well in towns where there is a festival and event as well. It brings that little piece and restores a huge amount of pride as well. And of course, even this week, it was announced that Minister Peter Burke had secured an additional €150,000 investment for the Flat Ceoil, all of which I'm sure goes a long way towards meeting the running costs of the event.
That's it. Like, it's a massive budget. Like, it's in excess of €1.5 million to run the flat from start to finish. And Peter has been an exceptional local leader in getting that delivered on the ground. And it's a huge help, I think, to the committee and Ceoil to the hearing to be able to do that and to fund it properly. So there's no messing around. And, you know, and businesses are getting approached for support where they can. And a number of businesses have been extremely generous with the flat to make it all happen. It's a lot of money.
Look at John, all the very best to yourself and to everybody involved over there, and here's to a very successful week for Flat Ceoil 2022. John Gagan, thank you very much for coming on this evening.
Thanks, Ron.
And that's John Gagan there, President of Mullingar Chamber. And the Mullingar Chamber, actually, I saw a post they had on LinkedIn today. I think their members have over 60 jobs that are currently available. So you can check out mullingarchamber.ie or check out their social media channels and get more information on those jobs. Because at the start of the show, I had Brendan Kelly there, the Commercial Manager at Bordnamona, mentioned that across the three primary areas of their business, they have over 80 positions currently open to be filled from at all levels, from kind of management levels down to kind of general operative level too. So great diversity of roles there. And I say 60 jobs plus for Mullingar Chamber members alone. And that's only two groupings that we speak about on the show this evening. So as I draw this evening's show to a close, just a quick thank you to all, to evening's guests, to Brendan Kelly from Bordnamona, to John Gagan there from Mullingar Chamber, Jane Swarbrick from Inglot Cosmetics, and Regina Dunn from Bloom HQ, speaking about that fantastic agri food sector initiative that they've started down there, and it's already achieved quite a lot, and be interesting to hear what comes out of their major think tank that's taking place in Mount Rat tomorrow. This show will be podcast on the Listen Back section on Midlands103.com from around 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock tomorrow morning. There is a brand new podcast section built onto the website. It makes it even easier for you to listen back to the links of the show. And actually, two of the interviews from last week, the one with Laura Dillon from Waterland Private Equity, you might remember them. They're the majority stakeholder now in Mullingar's Ritech Group. It was a hugely popular podcast and has been shared and liked numerous times across the various social media channels. And also the interview I did with Mark Gibbons, the CEO of TappyTag from Athlone. And you might recall last week, Mark gave me my own TappyTag, and I've been using it over the past week with new people that I meet. And it's really interesting how one tap off the phone, they get all your contact information uploaded onto their phone instantly. So the day of the old-fashioned business card does seem to be numbered, and it's technology that definitely works. So those two podcasts, along with all the podcasts from the last number of months and going right back to the start of the show, are available there on the Listen Back section on Midlands 103. Thank you for listening. I suppose as July draws to a close, keep an eye out, because the July edition of the Taking Care of Business newsletter will be out at the end of the month too. And that will also have links to those podcasts, as well as touching on all those main business news stories that have been featured on the show over the past month. If you want to get in touch with me with a story, business@midlands103 is the simplest email to get us on. If you've got an idea, if you've got a pitch or something that you think is worthy of featuring, please email business@midlands103.com or just get in touch with the team here by text on 083 3010 103. Always glad to hear from you. And I will do, as I've always done, and keep bringing you those fantastic business news stories that are everywhere across the Midlands. There is no end to them, and long may it continue, and continue the growth and the prosperity as we hopefully move beyond COVID-19 and weather the challenges that lie ahead in terms of energy and fuel shortages and that type of stuff. Hopefully it won't come to what it is. Hopefully inflation stabilises and we all have a good year or two ahead. Stay tuned here on Midlands 103, because after news at 8 p.m, Alex Rowe is going to bring you Country Roads. He's in for Joe this evening. He's got a bumper show lined up for you. And that's really it for me for this evening. I will talk to you all Next week, as I always do from 7 p.m, enjoy the rest of the weather. It's warm and a bit balmy out there, but you know what? Get out and enjoy it. Talk to you all soon.